So the Electoral College should not be abolished, but does that mean we should leave it as is, or should there be some modifications? I am Ken Drew, and this is Taboo Topic.
Keep up to date with the latest content through social media. Type in the search bars of Instagram, Getter, Truth Social, and TikTok, mainly those first three of Instagram, Getter, or Truth Social, Kenjin underscore Express. I repeat, Kenjin underscore Express. Spell the word engine, then put the letter K in front of the word engine, then you get Kenjin, one word, underscore Express. You can also follow this show on Facebook just by typing in the search bar of Taboo Topic. Look for the logo that says Honesty Equals Understanding. You can listen to this show on any platform from Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google, and even Amazon, which, by the way, please don't forget to give this show a rating and review. If it's anything less than a 5-star, let me know so I can better serve you. Last but not least, you can find the inspirations for the Wednesday's episodes on my Substack newsletters. Type in the URL at kenjin296.substack.com if you want a visual of the inspiration and you want that script to see what will the episode on Wednesday shall be focused on. Share this with your friends and family members, because here on this show, we dare to think out loud and question the narrative. Free speech triumphs safe space, because in order for us to think, we have to risk being offensive. If we want true peace in our society, we have to be able to be honest with each other, without judgment. If we can be honest with each other, then we can achieve real peace in our society. Amen. This is a reminder that the Biden administration abandoned 9,000 to 15,000 Americans in Afghanistan. Now, you won't hear about this from the media or any politician for that matter, because the global elite have their own agenda that disregards human life and basic human dignity. So, to the families and individuals that have been affected by this abandonment, know that you have not forgotten. Most Americans, like myself, know, or your loved ones, didn't choose to stay behind. If there's any way I can further help besides bring awareness, reach out at Kenjin underscore Express. I repeat, Kenjin underscore Express on Instagram. Spell the word engine, put the letter K in front of the word engine, then you get Kenjin, one word, underscore Express, if you have by one in a millionth chance hear this message. It's not much, but know this, justice will be served for those who lied to justify their incompetence. After all, I believe in God, who is in control of all things, and he says, vengeance is mine. Now, let's get back to the show. Hello, everyone. My name is Ken Drew, the show, a host of Taboo Topic, with my co-host, Ryan. From between the wires. What's up, Ryan?
There we lose half our audience right there. I'm doing pretty good. How are you, Ken?
Nah, man, that will keep the audience entertained. We need all the right, entertainment right, aspect. Sure.
Whatever you say. You're the boss.
I'm doing well, Ryan. I'm doing well. Welcome back to the show, folks. Make sure you hit the like button and subscribe. Hit the notification bell. Most of us don't do it, but please help boost our self-esteem by hitting that notification bell. Help us beat the algorithm. Also, the intro song is credited to Devin Farley, so thank you for the intro song. And now that we got that out of the way, Ryan, how is life for you?
Oh, it's going pretty good. You know, we're coming up on, well, it feels like the end of the semester already. I still got a couple of weeks left, but right before Thanksgiving, we've got our national conference, so I'm gearing up for that and making sure that everything is in line. We've got a tournament next weekend. Yes, next weekend. Had one last weekend. No tournament this weekend. I'm pretty much like every other weekend there's been a tournament that we've been traveling to. So it's been hectic. But it's good. I love my job. That's why I took the job that I did. Is I love coaching. I love traveling. It just gets a little tiring. Once you hit November, it's like, ooh, man, we're coming up right at the end of the semester. It's like a brick wall you're speeding towards, and then it's finals.
Yeah, it's crazy because I have like 1 month left too before the semester ends. And yep. So it seems like yesterday I just started the semester of my second semester of college experience.
How has that been going for you? Is it everything you ever? I mean, I've not left school, but how is it everything you ever dreamed of?
Still too early to tell, but
that's a no.
Well, it's definitely a experience. I'll tell you that much. I really haven't, because the thing is, I've only had 2 in-person classes so far in the 2 semesters I've been at the university. So because of that, I feel like it would be different if I was forced to have like all in-person classes and
that's fair.
Forced to have all the interactions. But my favorite class so far is Spanish because we're forced to interact with our classmates. So
sure.
That's probably been my favorite class so far. And I've made some friends from that class. So
good.
We may start a Spanish club. So that'll be fun.
Clubs are always good. I always push people as students, join a club, find an interest group, because if it doesn't give you the network connections, it at least gives you a friend group. Most give you both. So definitely recommend those. Are you a person who learns better online, or are you a person who lives better like in person, face to face?
I learn better in person, face to face.
Okay.
But I'm like
the same boat.
I was going to say, but I do like the flexibility that online gives as far as like if I wanted to travel or needed to travel.
Yeah.
There's that flexibility with the online course.
I prefer when I'm teaching public speaking that it be in person. Excuse me. But for the summer, I prefer it to be online because I usually wind up doing some travel, whether I'm going to see family, my wife's family, whether I'm going to like a conference or just, you know, trying to get out of Dodge for a little bit. It's nice to have that flexibility and not be tied down to the classroom for, you know, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, 6 weeks. But generally, I like to teach and take classes in person. So I'm right there with you.
Especially for me when... I mean, you understand because you've been doing long distance, but the long distance aspect is also a factor as far as the flexibility you have with online classes.
Absolutely.
So, folks, just a reminder, folks, that Ryan is a married man now. So make sure you comment down below and congratulate him on his on his new marriage, his new matrimony. Say hi to your wife for me, Ryan.
I will. So.
With that said, folks, let's go ahead and get the show started real quickly. Quick recap from last week. Basically, more or less, Ryan and I discussed and debated the topic of Electoral College was the federal popular vote and whether or not it was time for us to move to popular vote, in which Ryan and I discussed. And you let us know. Just go back to listen to last week's episode. You let us know if you agree with us or disagree with us. But more or less, Ryan and I agreed with the status quo. If you disagree with the status quo or disagree with the status quo, again, comment down below. Let us know. With that said, that's where Ryan and I probably end our agreements as far as the Electoral College, because even though we agree the Electoral College system should stay in place, and this gets into today's episode, I believe there should be some amendments, some modifications to the Electoral College system that will be better served for the American public. That's just my perspective. Ryan, go ahead and give your perspective on the Electoral College system itself.
I'm willing to at least consider all the – like, I mean, your proposals are reasonable, and I'm excited to discuss them. I don't really have any of my own that I was like, ooh, I think this would make it better. I am a big proponent of actually keeping the Electoral College because I think that it protects – the voices that would otherwise be undercut. I think that there are disadvantages to both. I don't really think there's a lot of what we would call net gain if we get rid of it. So, and I think in general, there are more disadvantages if we get rid of it than if we keep it. I'm a all big right. proponent of making sure that, you know, I mean, honestly, pretty much all the states that I've lived in have been heavily agriculture based or something other than people based, right? So I would certainly not vote against my own interests in that case, because I know this is what it does, right? Is like usually the people who are in favor of doing away with the Electoral College want it to be population based. I'm not only a big proponent of the Electoral College, I'm a big proponent of us being a representative democracy, not a true democracy, right? So I need, for me to be happy, what I need is that representation, regardless of where you live, those checks and those balances. I think this is a very important check. So that's why I'm status quo. Nothing really to report for new direction.
And I would say that my modifications even further enhance the idea of a constitutional republic or a representative democracy, because I do think, at least when it comes to the states itself, when it comes to federal elections anyway, And this is really what the Electoral College I'm addressing right now. These proposals is really about addressing like the federal election process for the president. That's it. So as far as like states' rights is concerned, like if they want to continue doing, you know, what they're doing, what they have been doing as far as how they elect their governor or their representatives within the state, that's their business. But it comes to like the actual presidential campaigns and everything like that, I think that we need to make these changes to actually further give power to the little guy or incentivize the little guy. Because like I talked about and alluded to last week, a state like Illinois, for example, the majority of the state geographically is red, but Chicago takes up majority of the vote. And so you have a lot of people in these smaller precincts, if you will, that do not feel as though it's worth going out to vote because they feel as though their votes are going to be drowned out. And thus, you also have the criticism, which I think as far as the criticism against the Electoral College, as far as, well, the presidential candidates only focus on the swing states with the Electoral College system. And I kind of agree with that. I think the president, every presidential campaign, the candidate should be forced to go to every single state because no state is safe, in my opinion. It shouldn't be safe. A state like even, and I say this as a conservative who lives in Florida, a darker shade of red and everything like that, I think a candidate should be forced to, you know, at least be in touch with their constituents and make sure that they don't take their voter base for granted. And so that's really the whole idea with these modifications I have. California, same thing. Once upon a time, I mean, even now a little bit, not as much maybe as was 10 years ago, but let's say by 10 years ago standard, like California, at least geographically, it was predominantly red. But if you go to cities like Los Angeles, San Francisco, Sacramento, like those major cities, they were predominantly blue and they always drowned out the vote. Same thing with New York. New York State takes up the majority of the vote in their state. So again, I think these modifications further enhance the idea that we are a representative democracy. So without further ado, I'm not going to do that. Never mind. If I had a drum roll, imagine a drum roll though, but drum roll please, Ryan. And then we will go ahead and start with the precincts. My very first point I want to make as far as the change, it will be the every precinct will be granted points based on the popular vote. The amount of points will be based on the population size within each precinct. That's change number one. Change number two, the points from the precinct will count towards the electors from the state. The candidate with the most points within the state shall be awarded the electors from the state. Point number three, states shall have the right to legislate a formula to establish a point system based on population in the precinct, but must equal to 99 points. And the reason why I say 99 points is to avoid a case of a 50-50 split. So if I would have went up to 100, then would have had possibility of like 50-50 tie, then what happens? Just go 99, keep it odd.
And that's just for determining your slate of electors for the state. You're not changing how many points each state is worth toward the presidency, correct?
Right. Correct. Yeah. And so the last point is states shall reserve the right to determine their own election process for local and state elections, as I alluded to earlier. The amendments only concern the federal process. Anything not covered in these amendments will be subject to Article 10. For some people, this may seem more radical who want a direct democracy. For some, this seems reasonable. But Ryan, you alluded to and foreshadowed, they thought these were reasonable ideas, reasonable changes. So go ahead and give me your feedback on the changes that I proposed.
You said something in the first point. Can you just restate what your first change would be? I want to be sure before I comment that I fully understand what you said.
Every precinct will be granted points based on the popular vote. The amount of points will be based on the population size within each precinct.
Okay. What is the status quo for that? Are you trying to remove the winner take all? So like, for example, we can split by state, or are you leaving that to the states? What's kind of the change here, just for those, including myself, who might not be aware of like the specific rundown of the precincts? Like I know how the point system works. I'm not quite sure what the change for the precincts here is.
So the precincts essentially will be the only place where the direct winner take all takes into effect.
Okay. So if I'm in the first precinct and it's the GOP candidate that gets all those points. It could be up to, let's say, you know, how many points for that state that goes. So it lets your electoral for the state be split by precinct, basically.
Yes. And the direct vote, popular vote, still counts, but only in the precincts. And this ensures that the precinct with the larger populations don't have too much power to where they drown out the votes of the smaller precincts. So it would protect states, like I said, like Illinois, California, New York. So a place like Illinois, the smaller precincts, the people will at least feel as though they have a chance to have their voice heard.
Sure.
Because their voice in the precinct that Chicago's in, for example, is not going to drown out the smaller surrounding precincts around it.
Right. We touched on this last week a little bit, and I want to reiterate this because one of the more reasonable arguments that I hear that I think is just kind of a misalignment of kind of what you want for your goal for this, but that I still find to be a pretty reasonable argument from those who are in favor of getting rid of the Electoral College is, well, yeah, of course Chicago is going to have more weight in the state than the grasslands, right? Or like the cornfields, because there's not people there. And what the Electoral College does is it makes it so that it's not accounting for that so much as North Dakota has fewer people than Los Angeles. It has fewer people than New York City. And so they still need a certain amount of points proportional to their population to represent, but so that it locks in what the presidential candidate is supposed to be trying to achieve instead of saying, yeah, that's all right. There's only, you know, X amount of people in this state. Let's just forget them. And that's kind of what it pushes. I think if I'm understanding what you're saying correctly, you're kind of mirroring that principle with the precincts. Are you then going to kind of mandate that, let's say, like the precinct in Chicago,
yeah,
or that Chicago is included in, it winds up going blue as it always does, then those points will be a percentage of however many electoral votes Illinois gets, and then the other precincts will also be split up, and then your final tally of you're keeping. How many? Let me go, because I actually don't know how many electoral college points is.
I think it's Illinois, like 538. Oh, Illinois itself. I think it's like 12, maybe. I could be wrong. No, I think it's 18.
Well, this is why we have the beautiful Google. Age of Google. Electoral votes point. Twenty votes in the Electoral College. So let's and just so that it's not messy, let's say you've got, I don't know, 10 precincts. Each one of them would be worth 2, or would you divide the precincts proportionally based off of Illinois has more?
So this is what I had in mind. This is where the other point comes in, as far as the precinct will be counted towards the electoral state. So yeah, this is the third point that actually touches on. So the state shall have the right to legislate a formula to establish the point system based on the population in the precinct. So kind of like how we determine like how many electors each state gets is based on the population. Same with the precinct. So the precinct, yeah. Let's say Chicago, let's say Illinois decides, so Chicago, you know, precinct is worth, I don't know, 10 points. Yeah. And the surrounding areas is worth 2 points each. And whoever, you know, and the candidate that, and so let's say the Democrat wins that Chicago precinct, they get 10 points, and then it leaves all the other precincts, it's up for fair game essentially, right? Because it's not guaranteed that every precinct is going to go Republican, but it's not guaranteed every precinct is going to go red either. So Mitt Romney, go ahead.
I was going to say, so then what I'm understanding is you're trying to give the smaller areas at least a point, right? Because it's like, they're, yeah, like, all right, look, blue doesn't represent us, and 2 points might not be a lot, but it's 2 points towards the candidate that we prefer in this instance, which prevents, yes, them. And you're also forcing the states to break down their electors, or at least have the ability to break down if that's how the votes break out, but mm-hmm. you're allowing the state to decide what those are worth. And what, correct, I like about your proposal is that it makes it so that it is the state's decision. because you're not letting the federal government oversee that. The only thing the federal government might quote unquote oversee is that your precincts need to be predetermined. There needs to be a rule for how much they're worth, and then they go how they go, so that there can't be. Now, what you'll probably see is what we would call gerrymandering, right? Where like people redraw districts and then they change how much they're worth over time. But again, that's a state issue, right? Mm-hmm. But you're still forcing them to at least make the districts, precincts, whatever the right term is there, represent the population. What would you say to the criticism? Because I could see this being a criticism, and I don't quite know if I have this criticism yet or not, but it's just kind of going through my mind as a possible thing. Are we just doing true democracy with extra steps here? Right, because we're drawing so many lines, like, and I feel like you're still putting checks and balances to where the Electoral College is still there, and it's not quite a true democracy. It kind of bridges the two. What would be your response to someone saying that?
Well, a true democracy would be if there would be no Electoral College, first and foremost.
Sure, yeah.
And so if you want a true democracy, get rid of the Electoral College system altogether.
Okay.
And as far as within the states anyway, this is actually representative democracy with extra steps, I would argue, because that's exactly what it's doing.
But those steps, I think that from what we've been discussing here, I think that they balance. The states still get their points to go towards the Electoral College with their slate.
And the popular vote still counts.
It does.
Within the precincts.
I feel like exactly. And that's where I agree with the popular vote for the Electoral College purposes, right? Because I think that it's very important that when I go, my vote counts towards determining that. But I don't want a true democracy for the presidency, because again, insert the issues with flyover states. It just shifts the problem, right? And you mentioned earlier, hey, let's make sure, you know, you shouldn't take these people for granted. It's like, no, I agree. But the reason swing states are targeted is because those areas are either diverse in population or they're diverse in their export. So for example, Pennsylvania was a pretty good example of this, and I think still is. Most of Pennsylvania, that is the farmland, the oil, they were more in favor of Trump, but Biden was trying to sway them, and he did sway by flat out lying that he wasn't going to go after fracking, and then did go after fracking. He did go after oil permits, and he didn't ban them, but he made it a hell of a lot more difficult to do and disincentivize people. And the reason that that was a swing state is because you have a split population. You've got big cities like Philadelphia that have nothing to do with oil, but then you've got a little bit of farmland, and you've definitely got oil out there. Like it's actually it's kind of like Illinois, just with a different export, right? So naturally, that's going to always be the case, whether you're going after them as a swing state or a swing population, right? Because even if we're like, okay, great, do away with the Electoral College, let's just do a true vote, there's still going to be a swing state in those specific areas versus New York, probably not so much, right? Like, I mean, it might shift it a little bit, but not a whole lot, because New York is still going to go blue in a lot of areas. It's going to go red in others. It's just on an individual basis, so it might break away a little bit differently.
Right. Well, at the same time, though, with at least my proposals, I would argue anyway, is that, like I was alluding to earlier, every state would be, essentially become a swing state. Every presidential candidate would be forced to actually campaign in every single state. And I personally think candidates should be forced to talk to, even like if you're a Republican, you should be forced to go to California and campaign there and try to earn their votes, because you shouldn't have, I don't know. Because to me, in Texas right now, one of the criticisms right now that the GOP is getting is they're taking their voter base for granted. And that's why Beto is getting a lot of popularity there, because that's why Beto, for example, is getting traction in Texas. I don't think he's gonna win. But it goes to show you, though, like the idea of a state having a stronghold can easily take their voter base for granted, to the point where they may start even passing legislation that may be considered extreme, at least in hindsight. For even go to California, they pass legislation that are extreme in hindsight. And so if you have a situation where every state is a swing state, the presidential candidate, whoever becomes president, they'll be forced to be moderate, because they know there's not a single state that's safe for them. Any state can switch at any point because not they can no longer rely on those big cities in some of those states as far as, yeah, California's going to go blue every single time. I don't have to worry about campaigning there if I'm a Democrat, or I don't have to worry about campaigning in Texas if I'm a Republican. No, every single state now is a swing state. Yeah. You have to campaign there now. And you cannot pass legislation or propose ideas that are radical that the American people do not want and get into our business.
I agree with that portion. I don't know that I agree with the statement that voters are taken for granted per se, because I do think that there is a difference between, hey, I'm not campaigning, reassuring these people that I am a, let's just take Texas for an example, right? Texas is very much leave us the hell alone, Second Amendment, agriculture, you know, carbon emissions over green energy because of what they need to export, et cetera. And I don't know that a candidate needs to necessarily go in there and say, by the way, I'm for this, which is why it's usually, you know, Beto coming out and being like, I'm against these things, as opposed to Abbott saying I'm for these things because he's got a track record. So I don't know that I would take these are neglected voters. Sometimes that's the case. But let's just talk about the amount of funding that it takes for a candidate, especially so when Trump campaigns, Biden campaigns, they've both been president before. They have to have security details. You've got to like clear stuff out. And even for people who are a presidential hopeful instead of a previous president or current president, they still got security. So then like to go to a place that is quote unquote secured, as far as like the vote is locked in as red or blue, you got to expend resources and stuff. And so I can see the argument there for where it's not that you're neglected. It's that we're not worried about you. And should I take you for granted as that candidate? No. But I don't know that unless they're just like, oh, I can be as radical as I want, I got it in the bag, or I don't have to listen to them, I got it in the bag, then I agree with you. But I feel like Abbott in Texas and some of the other, let's just say like Biden in New York, or like, I don't know that that means that they're taking them for granted so much as they are just being more strategic in the way they apply the limited time and resources they have on the campaign trail. What do you think about that?
Well, then I would say the amount of time they have to campaign is the issue. Then we need to address how much time, change the campaign laws anyway to give them more time.
That would fix it. Although I don't know that I want my taxpayer dollars spent on, you know, more campaigning.
Well, that gets into the election issues where I will talk about next week. Foreshadow, folks.
If we did something that's like, hey, you can't use this or the other, then I'm like, sure. Yeah.
Like I would, you know, I think there should be some major campaign laws that need to be changed, I think, to where taxpayers aren't the ones funding it. And if they want to use any campaign money, it has to be like our choice to donate money to them first and foremost, not through our tax dollars. But that's not to get ahead of ourselves, folks. But that would be like my response then to your concern as far as, if we wanted the presidents to actually have the time to campaign, just go ahead and change the campaign law so they have more time. And then we can also include in there, like, let's change how they get funded and how they use their campaign money. But I still like the idea that presidential candidates are forced to go to these states, every single state, campaign there. Because let's use Illinois, for example. Like, yes, a Democrat's not going to – Illinois is – like there's a lot of farmland to a lot of like open area as well, like outside of Chicago, for example.
Right.
But a Democrat could still pass legislation that go, they can literally neglect and say, we don't care about you guys.
They do that a lot anyway.
They do that. Exactly. And so I think these ideas anyway, protects, like I said, mentioned earlier, the little guy, essentially the smaller precincts. And that's really what I'm basing these proposals off of, is it protects at least the little guy, the little smaller precincts, the smaller populations, the electoral college within the electoral college system, more or less.
Sure.
You know? And so by doing that, at least gives it still popular vote still matters.
Right.
It's just now been reduced to the precinct itself. Right. So the precinct of Chicago, they only speak for Chicago but only for a certain amount of points. Every other county, you know, if a Republican could win it, if they get enough of the surrounding precincts, or to like add up to 99 so they can be a worthy electors at that point. But at least the Republican or even a Democrat in Texas has a chance now to win these states, because again, now every state is a swing state. They can't just take a state for granted anymore. They can't just ignore some states just because, oh, it's a stronghold. Why do I care? You know? So
it would definitely change the political strategy. I'm not going to say that even eliminating the Electoral College would not change political strategy, because it would. Absolutely. So outside of that, I think that, you know, I see the utility to this. I just want to raise, you know, concerns, give you the chance to address those, play some devil's advocate. What else do we want to talk about as far as changes that you think are necessary?
I mean, so we went over the change that every precinct will be granted points based on the popular vote. We addressed that. The points from the precinct will count towards the electors from the state. The candidate with the most points within the state shall be awarded the electors from the state. State shall have the right to legislate a formula to establish the point system based on population in the precinct, but must equal to 99 points. And I'm even open, like, if I'm even open to, like, maybe not 99, if they want to do something, you know, different, we can, but it has to be an odd number, at least, I would say.
Basically, someone has to be capable of winning each of the precincts is what
right.
The big point is there. I think that's fair.
Yeah. And then, like, last point, states shall reserve the right to determine their own election process for local and state elections. So,
which makes sense.
Yeah. So if you are running for governor of Illinois, California, Texas, you guys, that's your business. I don't care what you guys do. If you want to go ahead and do a true democracy in your own state, then that is your right. Yeah. But like I said, this is mainly for the federal election process for the president.
Right. And to my knowledge, anything that's more like the governor, it's going to be a true democracy. Everyone goes and votes, right. And you get that talent because you're not spreading it across the U.S. And again, the important thing to remember here is the reason we do the Electoral College to shield, as you mentioned earlier, the little guy, is because the president is not supposed to be the king. The president is supposed to represent across the country in a king-like way, but not the monarchy that is the quote-unquote benevolent and sometimes not benevolent dictator that, you know, is cramming down these policies. They're supposed to be more moderate. They're supposed to broker the deals between the Republicans and the Democrats who are in the House and the Senate. It's like that's their job because we're looking at a big picture view of the U.S. Mm-hmm. At the state level, we leave them the way that they are, and they already are set up that way. Because you're not trying to get California and Tennessee to agree on something, right? So there's no reason for that. I have a question. It's not that I have a proposal so much as a question here that I'd love to hear your thoughts on.
Sure.
The Democrats, I don't think they passed this, but maybe they did. I think they did pass this. The idea here being that you can't have what we would call faithless electors. So we saw this, and the Democrats like to forget this, when Trump was elected, you had faithless electors who voted for Hillary instead. And then obviously you have the more recent example in the 2020 election where you had faithless electors where Biden had won the state, but the state sent the Republican electors who cast their vote or the Democrat ones just voted for Trump. Like that has happened. And they passed a law that says you cannot do that. You're symbolic, right? You don't get to... There should not be this ability for the electors to do anything other than the quote unquote will of the people. What do you think about that for the Electoral College?
Well, I would ask Democrats to talk to the states that passed like their measures to pretty much eradicate the Electoral College and force these states to vote, yeah. Force the electors to vote based on the actual popular vote instead of what the popular vote within their state is.
But
I would ask the Democrats first and foremost, like, how come you're concerned about electors, the faithless electors, when you have all these states like Colorado, for example, who now the electors will be voting based on the federal popular vote instead of the state popular vote.
Right. Well, these weren't even federal popular vote. This was like Tennessee was quote unquote won by Trump, right?
Right.
But when they sent their electors in 2016, I don't remember what state it was, but some of those electors cast their ballot for Hillary instead of for Trump. So it actually wasn't even the it wasn't even because she was the popular candidate. It was actually just because that's who they wanted to vote for. Because technically, before 2020, there were no rules, at least not nationally, that said electors must cast their ballot the way that election night had dictated. Like, so technically you could have had Tennessee go 100% for Trump and all of them could have been faithless electors and voted for Hillary. We don't see that happening, but they've now passed legislation to make it to where you would be fined or whatever it was if you did not vote for Biden. Because like you had a handful, what, like 16 Republicans or something that voted for Trump instead of Biden? And so, or 16 people who flipped, I don't know if they were Republican or not, but they were saying, no, you can't do that.
Well, I'm surprised I didn't mention it in my article, to be honest. I'm surprised I didn't talk about that.
I mean, here's the thing is that it's something that's not exactly clear, and it's something that we don't see happen a lot either.
Yeah. I mean, it would make sense to have a law in place to where the electors are forced to represent the people in their state.
Sure.
And so if there's an elector that does not feel comfortable voting for that candidate that the state decided to vote on, then they should just replace the elector and pick another elector that's going to actually vote on behalf of the state. But in return of that, all these states, such as like I mentioned ago, that decide that they're going to have their electors vote based on the federal popular vote instead of the state popular vote,
right?
They would retract their measures and allow their electors to vote based on the interests of their people and the people in the state instead. So that's what I would ask in return as a negotiation tactic anyway. So you want this? Okay. Well, I want this then.
No, I like that. I like that a lot.
Yeah. So that's what I would say. I mean, I thought if anything, these proposals are thought provoking.
Yeah.
People may disagree with it. People may love it. People may hate it. But I do think it does. It's at least in alignment with the shrinking of the size of the government, at least, in my opinion.
I agree.
So do you have any final thoughts?
No, we covered it. I feel like last week we really set up the importance of this. I don't think that we really disagree a whole lot on the procedural aspect here of what should be done. I think that, you know, I had the chance to raise any personal concerns I had, or at least bring up what certain audience members or even opponents might have of your proposals, and you had the opportunity to address them. So I think that we were pretty efficient today.
All right, folks. Well, remember, make sure you hit the like button, subscribe, hit the notification bell. If you haven't done so already, please share this with your friends and family members, by the way. Help us beat the algorithm. You can follow us on our social media platforms. Between the Liars, we'll eventually get back on track.
Eventually.
But on my show, we have a new episode coming out on Monday. Voter's Eye Edition coming out. So it's going to be Luigi from Agree to Disagree show. He's been on my show. He's we also love been Luigi. Luigi. we're going to talk about the state of Canadian politics, what's going on since post Freedom Convoy. So that'll be a good and fun conversation. And we also have another episode. We have a hot seat edition that I actually am going to be, it's going to be coming up this month. It's been a minute since I've done a hot seat edition, but the point of the hot seat edition is really just to put one idea, one subject, and literally just put it on the hot seat, put it on blast. And we're going to talk about dating actually on that episode. So if you're interested in talking cultural issues like dating, please tune into that episode. But you have to be sure to follow the social media accounts, because that will let you know when these episodes are coming out. So yep. Ryan, go ahead and close this out, please.
Glad I'm no longer a part of that dating pool. It's no longer relevant to me. All right, remember, you can find us on Spotify, Apple, YouTube, Twitch, and Google Podcasts. Be sure to check out Between the Liars and Taboo Topic on our social medias and our YouTube channels at Between the Liars and at Taboo Topic, at Kenjin _ Express. Sorry about that. Follow us on our social medias so you can stay updated. And if you enjoy this show, we sure would appreciate a 5-star review and share us with your friends. Subscribe to our channels and we'll catch you here next week. Help us envision a smaller, better, more accountable government. And that starts with a blueprint. Goodbye for now.